been brainwashed behind the scenes.
Highly confused.
He is enormous.
Let's challenge his shattered view of the world.
Here's a little edge for the never believer. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Why did you let it go? You're all that things we know.
We have just end up with a
possession of illegal fire. You saw all of the things that's wrong. Would you stand tall and strong? Or would you turn and walk away? What would you do if you knew all the things we knew?
Love is the only truth, everything else is illusion.
Showdown in Dixon City tonight. At stake, the right to bear arms. Several gun owners say the rights were violated at a local restaurant and they want answers. Good evening, everyone. I'm Lyndall Stout.
And I'm Andy Mahalshik. Thanks for joining us. Gun owners brought their concerns and their guns to Borough Hall tonight. That's where our Joe Holden joins now live. Hi, Joe.
Hi, guys. And first things first, not one of these guys with the guns was from Dixon City tonight, though it was a very interesting discussion inside council chambers. Now, most people here in Dixon City won't disagree with the fact that these folks have the right to be armed. They just say they don't like it.
Members of a firearms rights group have a problem with some Dixon City police officers.
Most of the people did not think we were breaking any laws and just felt that there are some things that made them feel uneasy or it was simply new to them.
On Friday, several guys from opencarry.org grabbed dinner at the Old Country Buffet. They were openly armed. Other people having dinner were frightened. This is the police call from the restaurant's manager.
He says, I have a couple customers that have some weapons on them and complaining.
Two officers responded and apparently asked the men for ID. Police say one of them was uncooperative. He was arrested. His gun was seized. Alex Arnault watched it all.
I mean, I felt like I was 16 again, being beat up by NYPD.
Most of the crowd at the council meeting was unsympathetic.
Why should I go to a restaurant with my children or anything and see a guy sitting there with a sidearm?
The openly armed men called the police department's response an outrage. While their right to carry is constitutionally protected, again, there was little to no sympathy in Dixon City.
I think these people were just here to make a statement. I just think they just selected the Old Country Buffet in our town, and I think they were just looking for publicity for the organization.
Well, they're trying to make their points for their cause. Again, they have a right to do that.
And the chief says if his officers did make a mistake, it was in the name of public safety. He says for now the case is closed. We're live in Dixon City. I'm Joe Holden, WB.
It's all about you with WYOU Interactive.
Welcome back. Our interactive topic tonight, open carry laws in Pennsylvania. Joining us for this segment is Mike Stollenwerk from opencarry.org. And Mike, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Mike, I understand you're driving up to Dixon City this evening for the Dixon City Council meeting.
That's right. I'm on wonderful I-81 with some of my fellow Pennsylvanians right now.
Mike, we talked to the chief about his understanding and how the incidents played out on Friday night at the restaurant. What is your understanding and what is your group alleging happened?
Well, some of our members reported that while they're peaceably and legally eating dinner with their families and friends, that the police suddenly barged in and detained them and searched them and began checking their serial numbers of their guns, only after a long period of time to figure out that there was no laws broken, but then they apparently seized one gentleman's gun for unknown reasons. So I wasn't there, but that's what occurred, and maybe you could bring me up to speed on what the chief talked about earlier today.
It's essentially the chief's assessment of thing. I'll let the chief, he's on the phone right now, if the chief would like to add anything to that, but that's very similar to what the chief told us.
Yeah, that's about basically what happened. I mean, I want to say about illegal searching, and we barged in. Again, we responded to 911 calls on the report of individuals wearing firearms in a restaurant, and we did not seek this on our own. We were, because of the fear of the patrons, that's why we responded.
Mike, what do you think things went wrong, and at this point, what action are you asking the city to take?
Well, I think there's going to be some gun owners show up tonight and ask the council to look into the matters at the management level. Clearly, some things went wrong and could have been corrected earlier. What we really don't understand is all this checking of serial numbers of guns. We don't understand that at all. And frankly, and I'm sure the chief knows this, you know, there are Supreme Court cases from Pennsylvania and the United States that say that a mere report of a man with a gun on a 911 call does not give rise to seize a person under the so-called carry stop doctrine. Now, I realize I'm being a little technical, but frankly, gun owners they're not expected to be stopped while they're obeying the law.
Now, let me ask you this. Why would the police be checking the serial numbers of these weapons?
Well, they can do that. Remember that the police are interested in protecting the peace and quiet of the inside of this restaurant. They have a right to look into why people are behaving the way they are. Obviously, we had some upset patrons in the restaurant. But, you know, another thing you need to realize is that, yes, these people had a right to carry firearms. It's in the open. They didn't even have to have a concealed weapon permit to do that. That's true. But you do need a concealed weapon permit to carry a weapon in the car. And so one of the questions I would want to know is, how did those people get to the Old Country Buffet? Did they walk there, or did they go there in a car? And if they were in a car without a permit to carry a weapon in a car, then maybe the police had something to look into there.
Chief, let me ask you this. Running the serial numbers on the weapons, is that something typically done? Why do that? What were you looking for there?
Yeah, we typically do that. I mean, you do have a right to bear arms, but convicted felons and such don't have that right. We don't know who these people are. We don't know if these weapons are stolen. These serial numbers were ran. Most of the weapons came back to the registered to the individuals that possessed them. And once that was determined, and they also checked on that they did have concealed permits, that information came back through the computer. They were given their weapons back, and there was no problem.
Mike, they're explaining why they decided to check the weapons. Does that sound agreeable to you, or?
Well, no. Here's where I think things are wrong again. There is no registration in Pennsylvania, and there's no reason to believe that the police can find out who might have obtained those weapons earlier. Sure, some are in the transfer database held by the state police, but frankly, the police don't have a right to demand to seize your property and run their serial numbers. And frankly, had one of those numbers come back bad last night or Friday night, it would have been suppressed under a Supreme Court case called Arizona v. Hicks. The police can't just fumble with your personal property and look at the serial numbers.
So welcome to Total Information Radio on May 17th. You just heard a couple of reports about the fine folks over at opencarry.org. And what you heard them talking about was, well, some people decided to exercise their Second Amendment rights, and they got arrested. They got scared little shitbirds, made the owner of the restaurant call the cops, and the cops fucking arrested a guy, and, you know, we're just fucking with people. So you want to check out opencarry.org, good people over there. Recommended by this program. So check out what you can do, what you can do to help them out. And welcome back from our brief hiatus. We had to build a new, and we are still building a new info bunker. And your host attempted some R&R, and of course that ended with a trip to a CIA hospital to get injected with poison and disease. But we've detoxed that, and by the way, if you don't have the oregano P73 oil in your weaponry with which you fight the Illuminati, and this isn't a paid endorsement, but if you don't have that, you're kind of fucking retarded. So, what else can we talk about here tonight? We have a little bit of audio lined up for you. We also have a big pile of supermarket tabloids. In fact, we're missing one. Might have to go for that later. But as we've mentioned before in this program, the supermarket tabloids are not plugged in. They're not part of the info matrix you find online. It's not part of Google News. And there are going to be some important developments and reports in these that you have to read critically, just like any other media source. So, as we go along tonight, we're going to have Hillary gay love scandal revealed, the sultry beauty who's with her day and night, Tom Cruise exposed, Scientology accused of brainwashing stars, plus in Kirstie Alley escape cult. Scientology, a very important Illuminati outpost. We have Obama caught up in gay murder probe. How much does he really know? Oprah brainwashed by cult. JFK Jr. murdered, which we already knew about that. We'll see what they say in the National Examiner. All these other headlines have been glowed, by the way. And we have some more that is interesting, and we'll get to that later. Why don't we, let's go to music a little early. How about Kinks, the Kinks? This is Power Man. Check it out.
I know that he's powerful, man. God, he's giving me power. Hello. My name is Larry Sinclair. On January 18th, 2008, I posted a video on YouTube. Hello. My name is Larry Sinclair. On January 18th, 2008, I posted a video on YouTube in which I stated that on two separate occasions in November of 1999, I performed oral sex on Barack Obama, and that while I snorted cocaine, Barack Obama smoked crack cocaine. Since the release of that video, I have received many death threats via phone and internet, both in my personal emails and in my YouTube emails, as well as text messages to my cell phone. The personal attacks against me and my family have intensified to an all-time high since the filing of suit in the U.S. District Court in D.C. The attorneys for the defendants in that suit, along with other people, have released my personal information throughout the Internet. They have released my social security number, my date of birth, my mother's personal information, the names of my family members and their locations, including my deceased father's social security number, date of birth, date of death, and other information, and have called my mother's home attacking me to her. In light of the recent passing of Deborah Palfrey, my family and I have increased concerns for my personal safety, and I have concerns for the safety of my family members. It is due to that concern that I want to make it very clear that under no circumstances or situation would I ever contemplate or commit suicide. The threats that I have received have become more intense, and in light of the murder of Donald Young and the apparent suicide of Ms. Palfrey, I felt it important that I make this public statement. In the event that something should happen to me, or I am found dead for any reason, my death should be immediately investigated fully as a homicide. My family and my attorney will have everything needed to assist in that investigation. Thank you.
Total Information Radio on the Revere Radio Network Sunday night show. This is going to be the regular slot, probably about 10 p.m. Sunday nights. The fine program that you just heard, Precognitive Dissonance, from our friends over at Anomaly Radio Network, will be moving to Saturdays at 7 p.m. Eastern on Revere, and will still be also available for download from revereradio.org, revereradionetwork.com, and Anomaly Radio, I think it's .com. Anyway, moving on, what you just heard there was a gentleman named Larry Sinclair reading a prepared statement regarding his possible death. And as we mentioned earlier, we have a bunch of tabloid intel on Obama and other personages important in the New World Order celebrity worship structure. And the Obama gay murder probe story from the May 19th, 2008 Globe magazine, that is available on Larry Sinclair's website, scans of that. It's not in print anywhere yet on the internet. And you have to Google Larry Sinclair to find that. But let's turn to our copy, see what we have here. It is on page... well, there's Oprah Brainwashed by Cult. That's a very important story as well. And Neil Young has cerebral palsy. But the big story, where the fuck is it? Where is that fucking Obama story? Page 34. And they also have this big story here. DC Madam was killed to protect politicians. We'll get back to that later. But a special report, Obama caught up in gay murder scandal. Presidential hopeful Barack Obama has become tangled in the gay murder probe rocking his controversial Chicago church as insiders ask, how much does he really know about the choir director's savage slaying? So far, Chicago cops' investigation into the murder of Trinity United Christian Church's gay choir director has come up empty. But a top Chicago private detective tells Globe he believes the shooting of 47-year-old Donald Young may be connected to Obama, who belongs to the church once headed by the scandal-scarred preacher, the Reverend Jeremiah Wright. Okay, so I wonder if we're going to get the name of this PI. Let's go on here. Quote, Donald Young was silenced because of something he knew about Obama, says the PI, who has connections to the police department's homicide unit. Okay, so it looks like an anonymous source. Donald was in a position where he heard a lot of things and saw a lot of things concerning Barack, the most well-known member of the church. Now, Larry Sinclair, the Minnesota man who has been dogging Obama with claims he engaged in gay sex and drugs with the presidential candidate in 1999, as you just heard, says he has given cops shocking new evidence linking the Democrat White House hopeful to the baffling murder. Sinclair failed a disputed lie detector test over his initial gay claims about Obama. But now he insists he had contact with Young shortly before the choir director was brutally killed. He says that each time Young instigated phone calls which were made not long before the murder. Young's bullet-riddled body was found when his roommate returned to their apartment on Christmas Eve. Some presents and jewelry were missing, and the apartment door was closed but unlocked. Sinclair says that between September and November 2007, 2 months before he went public with his shocking drugs and gay sex charges, he left 4 different cell phone numbers with Obama's campaign. He says he wanted the Illinois senator to respond to his story about their alleged tryst, contacted police, switching to new phone numbers as he slowly made his way from Texas to his latest home in Duluth, Minnesota. Sinclair claims that only someone in the Obama campaign could have given his number to Young. Quote, how did he know who I was and how to contact me before I went public with my allegations about Obama? Asked Sinclair, who notes he never met Young in person. Sinclair currently refuses to divulge the content of his alleged conversations with Young. But he says the chats revealed, quote, an intent to obtain as much information as possible as to whom I had informed about the 1999 encounters between Obama and I. Sinclair also claims that after talking to Young, it became clearer in the end that the individual I was speaking with also had a very personal and intimate involvement with Obama. Sinclair says that on April 1st, he faxed an affidavit concerning communications between myself and the murdered choir director to Chicago police. He also insists a Chicago police detective contacted him regarding the case after getting his fax. It's an interesting word choice, insists. Sinclair says he'll cooperate with the Chicago police in any way as they investigate the link between him and the slain church leader. Meanwhile, Young's murder has triggered a storm of speculation on the internet, which is still buzzing over the shocking anti-American remarks by the Reverend Wright, who presided over Obama's wedding and baptized his kids. Obama has backed away from Wright, who recently retired as a result of that scandal. But Obama still belongs to United Trinity Christian Church. One internet posting says, quote, this long-standing choir director's murder was discovered early Sunday morning, but didn't become public knowledge until Tuesday. What sort of cover-up exists between Chicago PD and the Obama camp to bury this story to advance Obama, the poster asks. Yeah, because, I mean, covering it up for 3 days like that is very shady. And a longtime political observer tells Globe the Young murder probe could spell trouble for Obama's White House bid. This story could become political dynamite for Obama's foes, the source says. Coming on the heels of the controversy over the anti-American statements of his pastor, this issue could gain steam and become a real problem for Barack. So there you go. That is from the Globe. We got, let's see what else we got here. Exposed Obama's ruthless wife. This is going to be from the April 28th edition of the Globe. So let's see here. This also is a big story. Doris Day betrayed. We'll explain why that's important. Stay tuned to Total Information Radio. But first, we are going to check out this story about Obama's ruthless wife. Because we know that she spoke at Obama spoke at the CFR in Chicago, the Council on Foreign Relations, which is a unit of the Royal Institute on International Affairs. And the royal comes from the British monarchy. So she's a big player in that, and she's a control freak. So, Obama's wife wears her pants. Feisty Michelle tells hubby what to say, how to dress, and how to destroy his rivals. Barack Obama's beautiful wife, Michelle, is a control freak. She's his handler, basically. And if he makes it to the White House, she will have the biggest influence of any first lady in history, say sources. Globe can now reveal that insiders, say the 44-year-old attorney and mother of two, is calling the shots. the campaign, even if Brzezinski really is. Goes on, Michelle tells him what to say. Her top advisors call her head honcho. Nothing, and I mean nothing, happens in the Obama campaign unless it goes through Michelle first, the insider says. California political historian Will Silvestri declares she will be the most powerful first lady in history if he's elected. She will have more influence than any previous first lady, including Eleanor Roosevelt. According to sources, Michelle has ordered her hubby to keep his distance from Oprah Winfrey. She's demanded that the bevy of Hollywood beauties who support Obama be kept far, far away. She's ordered 14 new suits for him that are one size too big because she believes voters want a hungry candidate, not a fat cat. See, it's all image. Wrote key pieces of her husband's famous racism speech and attends every strategy meeting on how to beat his rivals, and nothing is implemented unless she gives the okay. So it goes on. She didn't like to lose as a child, says her brother. And she's obviously got the power in the relationships, as Dr. Lillian Glass, famed Beverly Hills psychologist and body language expert. So there you go. There's also a sidebar here, which is interesting, because Oprah Winfrey's very, very strange cult she has. But it says she's suffering from a Baracklash. Once devoted fans have been deserting her in droves since she endorsed Barack Obama. This stunning setback comes as no surprise to Globe readers. We revealed in our April 14th issue that business associates, friends, and fans are urging her to ditch Obama over the Jeremiah Wright thing. But see, I think she used to be part of that church. Maybe she left because she didn't like it. I don't know. Anyway, goes on, and that can dovetail us back into the previously mentioned story about Obama brainwashed by cult. So, back to the May 19th Globe. And this is on page 10 here. TV queen snared in cult inspired by bizarre guru. And it's a guy who's been on her show, I guess, Eckhart Tolle. Oprah Winfrey is being brainwashed by the shady, fast-talking leader of a cult, sources fear. So, and she's got her own cult. And she's urging millions of her faithful fans to follow her. The TV titan appears to have fallen under the spell of best-selling spiritual author Eckhart Tolle, T-O-L-L-E, who has been accused of peddling nothing more than New Age gobbledygook, say insider. So she calls Tolle's book A New Earth one of the most important of our time and gushes that his internet seminars are the most exciting things I've ever done. Oprah touts his books and bizarre teachings on her talk show and on 90-minute webcasts. That's interesting. While Tolle earns millions from the Oprah connection, friends worry she's being duped. It's like Oprah's being brainwashed, one shock pal tells Globe. She carries Tolle's books around with her all the time and reads them constantly. She's just consumed by him. She can't stop talking about his, quote, remarkable spiritual teachings. And she's pushing his book like it's her Bible. We're worried about her. She comes across as being totally blinded by her new guru's charisma. She's sounding more and more like a brainwashed member of the nutty sect. Tolle's spiritual philosophy hinges on one bizarre Marxism that critics say sounds like nonsense. And this is what it is. Being with life is being one with now, he preaches. You then realize you don't live your life, but life lives you. Life is a dancer, and you are the dance. Columnist Roger Freeman compares Tolle to the crackpot character Kilgore Trout in one of Kurt Vonnegut's science fiction novels. And it goes on from there. The German-born Tolle claims he stopped going to school at 13 and didn't go back for 10 years. He boasts that he graduated with the highest mark at the London University in England. So German to London, possibly Tavistock. He had a suicidal, mind-altering experience in 1977. And then says the next 15 years are a mystery. He claims he wandered around London with no relationships, no job, no home, no defined identity. Okay, whatever. Okay, yeah, that does sound homeless guy walking around London, definitely Tavistock, sounds like to me. Very bizarre. So there's Oprah's cult for you. Let's do something we often do. Let's call the Ron Paul Legislative Hotline. See if this is the right number.
Hello, this is Ron Paul with your weekly update for May 19th. This week, as the American economy continues to suffer the effects of big government, the House attempted to pass two multi-billion dollar emergency spending bills, one for continued spending on the war in Iraq, and one increasing spending on domestic and international welfare programs. The plan was to pass these two bills and then send them to the President as one package. Even though the House failed to pass the war spending bill, opponents of the war should not be fooled into believing this vote signals a long-term change in policy. At the end of the day, those favoring continued military occupation in Iraq will receive every penny they are requesting and more, as long as they agree to dramatically increase domestic and international welfare spending as well. The continued war in Iraq and the constant state of emergency has allowed Congress to use these so-called emergency bills as a vehicle to dramatically increase spending across the board, including spending that does not meet even the most generous definition of emergency. For example, the spending proposals currently being considered by Congress provides $210 million to the Census Bureau and $4 million for the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. $4.6 billion is requested for closing of military bases, but not any of the more than 700 bases overseas, but bases here at home. Another $387 million would go to various international organizations and $850 million more just in international food aid. All this when food prices are skyrocketing here and American families are having a hard time making money. Because this spending will be part of an emergency measure, it will not count against debt ceilings or any spending bills limits set by congressional budget resolutions. It does not have to be offset in any way. Explosive growth of government is just another tragedy of this war. The bipartisan compromises made in Washington are at the expense of the taxpayer, not in the interest of fiscal responsibility or peace. The taxpayer loses and the government grows. The bottom line is that our dollar is falling, the economy is in rough shape, and government spending is wildly out of control. Congress argues over relatively minor details instead of dramatically changing our flawed foreign policy. We need to bring our troops home, not only from Iraq and Afghanistan, but from South Korea and Germany and the other 138 countries where we have troops stationed. Our foreign policy of interventionism is not only offensive to others, inviting further terrorist attacks, but it is ruining our economy as we tax, borrow, and print the money to pay the bills. The economy and ultimately the American people suffer because Washington is refusing to adopt more sensible and constitutional policies. Squabbling between those who favor increased welfare and those who favor increased warfare has given the American people a temporary reprieve from having to bear the burden of yet another dramatic increase in government this week. However, as early as next week, a compromise could be reached that expands both government warfare and welfare. As congressional approval ratings drop to 18%, according to a recent Gallup poll, the American people are telegraphing that Congress is taking the country in the wrong direction. Our government must stop bankrupting this country so that we can get back on track to a peaceful, prosperous future. Thanks for calling this legislative update. The new update is...
All right. Thank you, Congressman Honorable Dr. Ron Paul. Returning to our coverage of the tabloids, we have a more political story here. And that is about John McCain's crazy-ass rages, because he's a crazy motherfucker. So this will be the guy that Ron Paul's going against. Let's get that story here. This is the April 28th edition of the Globe again. Cruel and crude, John McCain attacked wife. New book charges. Presidential hopeful John McCain looks like a kindly grandpa, but he's a foul mouth and a vicious hair-trigger temper, and during one sudden rage slammed his wife Cindy with a vile four-letter name, claims a blockbuster new book.
I believe that word was a cunt, by the way. It doesn't even look like it says it in the Globe. The shocking incident came during his 1992 Senate bid and was witnessed by three Arizona reporters. Cliff Schechter writes in his book, The Real McCain. McCain was joined on the campaign trail by his wife as well as campaign aide Doug Cole and consultant Les Gullett. At one point, Cindy playfully twirled McCain's hair. Oh, look, he had hair. And said, "You're getting a little thin up there." Uh-oh. McCain's face reddened, and he responded, "At least I don't plaster on the makeup like a trollop, you cunt." Wow, Jesus Christ. Anyway, the author adds a politician tried to excuse his outburst by saying it had been a long day. Schechter questions the Republican candidate's fitness for the White House, noting that, quote, "If elected president, McCain would have many long days." Yeah. The shocking outburst was never reported, of course, because they're all fucking whores. But the author says that's because the newspaper shied away from that sort of news in the early 90s. Well, yeah. Members of the media are squeamish covering stuff like this, so they let it go. Saying they didn't know how to react when people used naughty words in 1992. McCain spokesman Jill Hazelbaker says the story is completely fabricated and slams the book as trash journalism. But the author writes that the U.S. Senator was nicknamed McNasty in high school and has blistered colleagues, foes, and family members with his foul outbursts. A Washington insider tells Globe, "Those around the political scene know John McCain is not the calm, grandfatherly type many people on the outside believe he is. He's always had the hot reputation of being hot-headed and downright mean at times, and is said to have swapped punches with another member of the Senate." Yep, because he is a crazy motherfucker. And it goes on, McCain says his temper's not a problem, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, so there you go. McCain, crazy asshole, called his wife a cunt. May 19th, Globe's got this story. Barbara Senator was fucking the only black senator during the 1970s. Republican guy from, like, Massachusetts or somewhere in the Northeast. We have many more stories. Of course, there's a D.C. Madam story. I think a lot of us know that. It was in the Globe on May 19th. The D.C. Madam, who hooked up Vitter and others, was killed. They said it was a murder. Or they said it was suicide, rather. That's bullshit, as you heard the Larry Sinclair statement earlier in the show. You know, if you find him dead, investigate it as a murder. Same here, right? Notorious D.C. Madam Deborah Palfrey's long list of powerful prostitution clients kept the nation's lawmakers quaking was murdered. That's a buzz rocking the internet and filtering through political circles after she was found hanging by a nylon rope in a shed next to her mother's home in Tarpon Springs, Florida earlier this month. Just weeks before her death, she'd been found guilty running a call girl service to cater to Washington's power brokers. She faced 4 to 6 years in prison and was slated to be sentenced on July 24, but was appealing the verdict. So far, police are treating the death as a suicide, but suspicions run rampant. This woman was still appealing, wrote an internet poster. Why would she kill herself if she was trying to clear her name? Yep, she had big-name clients. Hustler magazine publisher Larry Flint, who is one of Palfrey's strongest supporters, believes she was murdered and says the media, quote, should be very cautious in treating this as a suicide. There you go. Louisiana senator and father of four, David Vitter, already admitted to be a client of Palfrey's. Sources say she was in a position to bring several other Washington bigwigs down. You know, who do we know? Cheney was a big rumor, right? And they go, oh, here you go. National security expert and journalist Wayne Machen claims Dick Cheney is among the heavyweights on Palfrey's list. The case smells about what insider tells the Globe. It's just too convenient. Chillingly, Palfrey told an interviewer in March, that'd be Alex Jones, I think, "No, I'm not planning on committing suicide. I'm planning on going to court and defending myself vigorously and exposing the government." So, there you go. More craziness. Where else can we go here tonight? Well, we got Doris Day outrage.
And the second time we had it in L.A., which is different. Well, then we took it deliberately. And then, well, we just decided to take it again in California, yeah. Well, we were on tour in one of those houses, like, you know, Doris Day's house or whatever it was we used to stay. And the three of us took it, Ringo, George and I think maybe Neil, and a couple of the birds, you know, that, what's his name, the one in the Steels and Nash thing. You know the birds? BYRG? Crosby and the other guy who used to be the leader, McGuinn, I think they came around, I'm not sure, on a few trips, like that, you know. And we were in the garden, had it. It was only the second one. We still didn't know anything about do it in a nice place and cool it and all that. We just took it, you know. And Peter Fonda came, and that was another thing. And he kept on saying, "I know what it's like to be dead." And he said, "What?" Mm-hmm. And he kept saying it, you know. We were saying, "For Christ's sake, shut up! We don't care. You know, we don't want to know." And he kept going on about it. And that's how I wrote, "She said, she said, I know what it's like to be dead."
And the songs are real diaries of how we feel, but also it's always not really, really real because it's a song and it's on a record and you project it in a different way.
In L.A., Paul felt very out of it because we're all a bit slightly cruel. So we're taking it in your not Doris Day's house, Doris Day's house, Doris Day's house.
I was going to tell you why this is important. And, well, the reason is Doris Day is a well-known doppelganger. The original Doris Day, born Doris Van Kappelhoff, died approximately 1954 after the filming of the Hitchcock film, the remake of his own film. Oh, fuck, what was it called? The one where she and Jimmy Stewart and their kids kidnapped in Morocco. Anyway, the big song in the movie was Que Sera Sera. In Doris Day Outrage, two new explosive books exposing shocking secret life of America's sweetheart. Famous lovers, gay rumors, plastic surgery, money scandals. And now if we actually get into the story, it's almost all about the replacement Doris Day. Millions of fans know Doris Day's original Girl Next Door, but now a pair of scandalous biographies are depicting her as a sexy seductress who desperately sought but never found true love. It's because she was living someone else's life. Of course she was cynical. The upcoming tell-all books claim to rip the lid off Day's deepest, darkest secrets, and they already have fans of the 84-year-old Hollywood legend screaming in protest. In reality, she's probably 79. We'll get to that later. Goes on. A Hollywood insider says Doris must be feeling betrayed by these books. She's such a private person. Well, yeah, she's got a lot of secrets to keep. I'm sure the last thing she wants is all these lurid claims about her love life and tragedies being revealed. Yeah, like the real Doris Day dying or being killed and you taking her place. But she is such a classy lady, she will rise above it. She's not called America's sweetheart for nothing. The shocking biographies claim to expose details about Doris Day's toward sex life, goes on, a mystery about her late son Terry, the pet scandal that broke her heart. What makes Day's story so richly fascinating is the fact that she was in many ways the opposite of her image as a girl next door, says David Kaufman, author of Doris Day, The Untold Secrets of the Girl Next Door, set to be published in June. She was like a real-life Cinderella who regretted going to the ball and finding a series of princes who proved to be less than charming. All right. Anyway, goes on here. Brett notes Doris was just 17 and pregnant when she married her first husband, Al Jordan. Now, see, I think that's, and this is David Brett, star of Doris Day, the Reluctant Star, slated to be released in Britain in July. She's always been portrayed as a perennial virgin, but Doris is more sex-mad than frigid, goes on. But Brett notes Doris was 17 and pregnant when she married her first husband. I believe that's because the original Doris Day actually shaved 5 years off of her age. So she really would have been 22. So that's really not that hard to figure out. So the fact that that this guy, David Brett, went along with the fake age is one thing. Of course, the thing is, if they admitted that the current one, who they call 84, was actually 89, there'd be probably even more questions, because she's 79, and she looks young for 79, actually.
Doris had her only child with a violent psychopath who tried to kill her.
Mm.
Her second husband, George Wilder, was no less crazy than the first. They also wed Marty Melcher, who would become her manager and swindled her out of millions, then had a short union to 12 years younger Maitre d' Barry Comden. Now, the Marty Melcher thing is interesting because, of course, he was controlling all the money because there was no fucking real Doris Day. It goes on, let's see, I need to skip that part. The other author, Brett, who's also written about Clark Cable and Joan Crawford, reveals Day had a slew of men to go along with her four hubbies. There were many more than even her friends knew about, he says. And there were a few she chased but never caught. Brett insists Day had a fascination with gay men, including Rock Hudson and Stephen Boyd. Day starred in movies like Pillow Talk and Please Don't Eat the Daisies. Retired from big screen work in 68. After a 5-year stint on the Doris Day Show on TV, she quit for good. And says that in 1984 she had a facelift. And they have the before and after pictures in here. It's funny, she looks more like an older version of the original Doris Day after the left. You can definitely see it's a little bit more than just a typical facelift. So Comden came up with the idea, that was her fourth husband, of distributing pet food. We've covered before how her organization and the animal rights organization she's hooked up with are tied to the Process Church, which is hooked up with Charles Manson. You will look up the Best Friends Society for that. And that also connects to her son, the original Dorsey's son, Terry Melcher, whose credit card Charles Manson was using. Who, by the way, her beloved son Terry was stricken with prostate cancer and after undergoing surgery died from melanoma in November 2004 at age 62. Now, this is interesting here. The loss was devastating to Day. She didn't attend his private funeral or the memorial organized later by his son Ryan, her only grandchild. So, the rest of the family didn't want her there. No one knows whether Terry was buried in a grave or rests in a vase on Doris's mantle, says the source. It's a mystery. That's not a very useful source. Her death turned the grief-stricken Day into a sad recluse, and so on and so forth. And above it's got Doris's red-hot romp with Mickey Mantle, plus her fling with a married man. So, I also want to note there's an edition of the Examiner, which doesn't seem to be quite as reliable as the Globe, that said one of these books or some other story said that Doris Day was with Ronald Reagan. That would have been the original Doris Day.
When I was just a little girl, my mother, what will I be? Will I be pretty? Will I be rich? Here's what she said to me. Que sera, sera. Whatever will be. The future's not ours to see. Que sera, sera.
As far as celebrity news, there's also the new issue of Paranoia magazine. There's an article in there, Tuesday Weld, High Priestess of the Illuminati. You may remember Tuesday Weld from her role in The Many Loves of Dobie Gillis, the Dobie Gillis sitcom show in the 50s. Warren Beatty was also on that. Let's see if we can pull that up. Tuesday Weld's Psychedelic Illuminati Conspiracy by Douglas Hawes and Adam Gowrightly. Tuesday Weld exhibited amazing clairvoyant gifts, and so on and so forth. She befriended Fidel Castro during his New York days. Reportedly, right-wing elements in Hollywood countered the Addams family with their own version, the Munsters. In one episode, Lily mentions that Herman has been acting strange since they watched a Tuesday Weld movie the night before. In the Addams family, the 5-year-old daughter was initially named Tuesday in the opening episode. Her name was changed to Wednesday
wrote no doubt a reminder to Hollywood insiders of the child prodigy that had emerged in their midst. So that could be interesting. Maybe we'll get into more of that later. There's also this JFK Jr. murdered headline that is from the May 12th edition of the Globe. Of the Examiner, rather. And the story here, it's kind of dodgy. It says secret sources say he was poisoned with a secret military poison that's only known by a number and by no name. Whereas there seems to be a lot more evidence of some kind of energy weapon, you know, some kind of electronic pulse, possibly. It just knocked out all the gizmos on the plane. But anyway, you can check that out. That says, after divers brought the bodies up, they were rushed to the Coast Guard station at Cape Cod. Massachusetts coroner vans whisked the remains to the Barnstable Medical Examiner's Office in Pocasset, from where they were again moved to a hospital in Bourne. Somewhere along the chain of transfers, samples of John's organs were removed and preserved for later tests, as the investigation source. Insiders say the word is John's Uncle Ted had his own team of experts take the samples, fearing there would be some kind of cover-up. It looks like Ted would have a good reason to think conspiracy, the source says. After a brief autopsy, John was declared clean and drug-free. There wasn't even a mention of the mystery substance that was covered up at the time. It's so hush-hush that the poison's only known by a reference number. Another insider says the drug in question was developed by a top-secret military chemical weapons lab in one of the western states. So, there you have it. The Hillary Gay Love Scandal, we got that in the May 5th Globe. This is a story that you can find on the internet. But it's got this big... Excuse me there. It's got this big cover story on the Globe, which is pretty interesting. And the story is about this aide. Her name is Huma Abedin. And frankly, she's Israeli, so it could be Hillary is getting sexed up from this pretty good-looking Israeli lesbo. She's 33. Whisper Campaigns is from Village Voice columnist Michael Musto. Whisper Campaigns are claiming that Hillary Clinton is Gail Kinging her aide-de-camp, the glorious Huma Abedin, wrote Musto. His words sparked an internet firestorm. Now a web search on Google connecting Hillary, Huma, and lesbian racks up more than 38,000 matches. If you call Hillary's residence in D.C. the first thing in the morning, Huma answers the phone. Same thing late at night and on the road. It's a closely guarded secret that Hillary's inner circle protects at all costs. This is from a top-level U.S. Justice Department quoted on BigHeadDC.com. Even the respected Sunday Times in London took note, saying, quote, the mainstream media, U.S. media has managed to ignore allegations that Hillary Clinton is having an affair with Huma Abedin. Goes on, Jennifer Flowers wrote in her book, Sleeping with the President, that he told her his wife has been with more women than I have. Oh, yeah, that's an oldie but a goodie. The newspaper reports that Hillary and Huma have been targeted with the rumors. Goes on, Huma, 33, an American-born Muslim raised in Saudi Arabia. Well, huh, that's not the Israeli Mossad story that was on the internet. That internet source for that was mostly, I think it was that guy, Cloak and Dagger, Tom Hennigan. I think he broke from Cloak and Dagger. I'll have to check that out. The senator and Huma have a unique relationship, says Mike Feldman, a friend of Huma and a former aide to Al Gore. Watch them together. There's this nonverbal communication between them. One internet blogger says Huma's salary climbed from $22,000 a year before the campaign to $108,000 today. Clinton advisor Mandy Gruenwald adds, I'm not sure Hillary could walk out the door without Huma.
Hillary unintentionally threw gasoline on the explosive rumors herself by gushing, Huma Abedin has the energy of a woman in her 20s, the confidence of a woman in her 30s, the experience of a woman in her 40s, and the grace of a woman in her 50s. She is timeless. Her combination of poise, kindness, and intelligence are matchless. There you go. Unhappy Democrats don't use the rumors during the convention. It's almost certain the Republicans will drop the bomb if Hillary wins the nomination. And goes on, revealed. Secrets of Muslim beauty who won Hillary's heart. Who is Huma Abedin? The mysterious beauty was born in the United States to a Pakistani mother and an Indian father and lived in Kalamazoo, Michigan till she was two. Her family moved to Saudi Arabia then when her father, an Islamic and Middle Eastern scholar who died when she was 17, he founded his own institute devoted to Western Eastern research. Now this sounds more like an MI6 operation than a Mossad operation. Huma's mother, who still lives in Saudi Arabia, is also a renowned professor in Saudi Arabia, according to one writer. Huma left Saudi to attend college in the U.S. and served as an intern for Hillary. At the same time, Monica was Bill's intern. Okay. Then she stayed on as Hillary's chief of staff's assistant for several years. Okay, it goes on. In 2000, Huma took over as Hillary's main aide and has been at her side ever since. So that would have been since she was 25. Huma is a stunning woman. One writer describes her as, she looks better in that picture, 5'6". With full lips and long auburn hair, always worn down, and she's shown the stunning half-Arab beauty, poised for a fashion spread in August 2007 Vogue magazine. It's definitely a familial relationship, said Mary Steenburgen, like older sister, younger sister. And also says Huma has been romantically linked to U.S. Rep. John Wiener, but the website BigHeadDC.com reported in late January that Huma and Wiener are just friends. The site claims she is, quote, dating someone intimately involved with the Clinton campaign. There's one more story we wanted to check real quick. What's wrong with Ringo? Aging ex-Beatle turning into oddball cheapskate. Penny-pinching Ringo Starr has been shocking friends and fans alike with his increasingly cranky moods and bizarre behavior, say sources. Ringo rarely ventures beyond his spatial home in Beverly Hills except to go to his favorite restaurant. He always demands a doggy bag. The drummer's also been taking swipes at his hometown, Liverpool, and furying almost everyone who lives there. On one British talk show, curmudgeonly Ringo pulled a face and answered no when asked if he missed the city where he was born. The backlash was so intense, a topiary statue honoring the Fab Four at Liverpool train station was vandalized. Ringo's head had been lopped off. He seems totally obsessed with giving the peace sign. He does it constantly. It's making him a laughingstock. I also think he resents that all the other Beatles always got more attention and adoration than him. Well, especially because the only other one left is a fucking phony-ass doppelganger, Paul McCartney, who's like a fucking retard. Just recently, the man once known as the nicest Beatle was caught on video snarling in New York at autograph seekers. No, we don't. Let's actually get some more audio. And there's a recent dust-up where some idiot accused Nico of being COINTELPRO. And the folks up at Paula Gloria made a little response to that. So we'll check that out and maybe play a little music. Keep listening to RevereRadioNetwork.com and click on the Make a Donation button so we can keep bringing this to you. This is all volunteer. It's totally uncensored, unfiltered, free speech. Peace.
Hi, you've reached the phone of Kurt Nemo, webmaster for KRWG FM and TV. I'm not available to take your call right now, but if you leave a message after the tone, I'll get back to you. Thank you. Recording.
Kurt, my name is Paula Gloria, and I'm with the Concordia Foundation, and I have a show called Farther Down the Rabbit Hole, and I'm joined by...
Rosalie Grable, the web fairy, who's wondering if Nico Haupt is supposed to be COINTELPRO and all. Please tell us who has hired them, because the checks must have got lost in the mail.
We'd like to have an idea of who next to call about this, because... as a charity director, I'm very concerned about homelessness, about hunger, and if this is so, I'm definitely being bamboozled, and I want to know where that check is, because it should be here. The Concordia Foundation is going to great, great lengths to prepare to find the best research on 9/11 truth. And my understanding is your posting on a website is, what, Prison Planet?
InfoWars.
InfoWars.
Claiming that Nico Haupt is a high-paid COINTELPRO? If so, please have them change his address so that the check comes here, because he is crashing on Paula Gloria's couch and doesn't even have fucking money for cigarettes. So if he is COINTELPRO and there's somebody out there who is funding him to say what he's saying, please have them call us and send the check.
Yeah, definitely, because, you know, we need to know. We're doing this for free.
And if we could be getting big money for it, that would be better. We could do more.
Or again, if we're being bamboozled, I want to know where I should be putting my loving, healing energy, because that's what this is about. It's about connection, and it's about truth coming forward. So please...
And nonviolent communication.
Yes, please, please give me the information. I'm dead serious. I'm definitely capable of being fooled. So my number is 212...
With us now, Rolling Stone magazine's contributing editor Matt Taibbi, who is author of this book, The Great Derangement, a terrifying true story of war, politics, and religion at the twilight of the American Empire. Great cover, too. Matt, thanks for joining us. Thanks for coming back. It's nice
to
see you.
Good to see you.
Well, exactly how deranged are we at this point?
We're getting there, you know? I mean, we're sort of halfway to totally deranged. So
well, what is The Great Derangement?
The theory of this book is that people are so turned off and disenfranchised by their government that they're increasingly retreating into conspiratorial and paranoid politics on both sides of the spectrum. So you have the Christian right on one side with those apocalyptic movements, and then you have the 9/11 truth movement on the other side, and both of those things are becoming increasingly mainstream.
And in the 9/11 conspiracy, I've seen stuff, the buildings were blown up from the inside,
right,
and
yeah,
all that,
exactly.
Yeah.
You were probably,
building number
actually,
five.
Yeah. Yeah. Building seven, yeah.
How they came down and everything, yeah.
Right.
Building seven, exactly.
Building
right.
Seven, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
did the planes play any role in blowing those buildings up on 9/11, according to the whack jobs?
No, some of them believe actually that there weren't any planes at all. In fact, that those were holograms.
Wow.
But and then, of course, there's the famous belief that the plane at the Pentagon was actually a missile fired, because they believe the hole is shaped like an airplane.
Why do people go into orbit like this? Why do people believe these things?
It's the Great Derangement.
I really believe that people are so accustomed to the government not providing any answers for them, or not responding to their needs, that they end up retreating into these sort of nutty escapist fantasies. Because
the same government
why not?
Really does respond. I don't think so.
Yeah, not enough. That's the problem.
No, I think is there anybody who's a cross-section person who reads the newspapers, keeps up with events really well, and also believes in these theories? Is there such a person?
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
You are?
Yeah, of course. But the problem is they don't believe the mainstream news sources anymore. They believe that we're, you know, the networks and the major newspapers that they're in on it, you know, at some level.
That's one advantage of working in politics and in journalism. You realize that nobody's in on anything.
Right, exactly.
Everybody's
out
to get everybody.
Yeah, that's what I always tell people, that, you know, they're too incompetent to really...
Well, nobody keeps a secret, though.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Matt Taibbi, thank you so much for coming into our studios this morning. The book of calls, The Great Derangement, a terrifying true story of war, politics, and religion at the twilight of the American Empire. Thanks very much.
We're going to play you out with some Sting.
No, there it is. We are going to do Sting, yeah.
Okay, but to play us out. What does that mean, to play us out?
Sting is going to do, it's a video, Sting video.
What is
for credits?
I don't know what that means, to play us out. What does that mean? To end the show?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, go, go.
In 5, 4, 3.
That's tomorrow, and that is it.
Okay. In 5, 4, 3.
That's tomorrow, and that is it for us today. And we will leave you with a... I can't do it. Okay. We'll do it live.
Okay.
Well, no. We'll do it live. Fuck it. Do it live. I'll write it, and we'll do it live. Right. Fucking thing sucks.
In 5, 4, 3.
That's tomorrow, and that is it for us today. I'm Bill O'Reilly. Thanks again for watching. We'll leave you with Sting and a cut off his new album. Take it away.